Om Jnanadhimadannasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Dhena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namah. How was everyone tonight? Good? Very good after the kirtan. Nice. We welcome everyone who's joined us online tonight. That means on the internet. And those who are on the phone also. There's a direct line here. And you can text in, because we have operators waiting to take your calls, at 650-245-7018. That's 650-245-7018. If you're out there watching, just text in and say Hari Bol. And we'd like to see who you are. And tonight we're going to have a discussion about hope or expectation, which is one of the principles of devotional service out of 64. And the development of this sentiment or this feeling is listed in the Shastra, in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and also in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to Sanatan Goswami, as ashabandha, or being bound by hope. Asha means hope or expectation. And it is listed as a very advanced sentiment. And there are verses which epitomize this particular feeling of ashabandha. One of them is given in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and I think it's in your shloka book. And in this, the devotee is giving a prayer that I have no qualification. I am not... Page 400. And if you're watching online, we're looking at the Srila Prabhupada Shloka book. And if you don't have a copy at home, text in and let us know, and we'll arrange for you to get one. There's a nominal fee for these, and we can send them to your home, wherever you are in the world, so you can follow along. So page number 400 in this book, and the verse goes like this. Na premna shravanadi bhaktirapiva yogo tava vaishnavo jnanam va shubha karma va kiyadaho sajjatir apyastiva hinartha dika sadake tvayitathap yache jamula sati he gopi janabalaba Vyata yate ha ha mad aishaiva me. And the translation is, O my Lord, I do not have any love for you, nor am I qualified for discharging devotional service by chanting and hearing, nor do I possess the mystic power of a Vaishnav, knowledge or pious activities, nor do I belong to a very high caste family. On the whole, I do not possess anything. Still, O beloved of the gopis, because you bestow your mercy on the most fallen, I have an unbreakable hope that is constantly in my heart. That hope is always giving me pain. Why are you smiling? Because you like it? Or are you just talking about it?
I like it very much.
Oh, okay. Where are the microphones, please? Gandharvika is saying she liked it very much. Anything more?
That's just thinking like if it is any person of this world, like we can attract them to our qualities or to our
wealth. She was saying if it's any person in this world, we can attract them with our qualities, our wealth, our...
But in front of the Supreme Person, we are really unqualified and this works so nicely.
But in front of the Supreme Personality of God, we're wholly unqualified. And this verse works very nicely. Keep going. This verse exemplifies the fact very nicely. Nice. Srivas Prabhu? One of the questions that came up when we discussed this during the Bhakti Shastri class.
Why is the devotee saying that this hope gives rise to pain in man?
And the devotees were asking, why is it that this hope gives pain in the heart? So it's a question that we can discuss during this class. Okay. So one thing is that the devotees consider themselves without any qualification. Some actually have no qualification, and others have such humility that although they're becoming greatly advanced and gaining more and more qualification, they feel as if they don't have qualification. This is mentioned in the symptoms of an advanced devotee by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Sanatan Goswami, that although a person becomes more and more qualified, he or she is feeling that I lack qualification. And it doesn't mean that they're inept or that they are not able to expertly perform their service. They do. But at the same time, they're thinking that I'm not very qualified. Really, as a byproduct of self-realization, one comes to understand one's insignificance in relationship to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, to the entire creation, to the advancement of other great devotees. And actually, there is a revelation based on reality that I am actually insignificant. In the realm of false ego or the ahankar, I tend to, through projection, put myself as a very important person and in the center of everything. Everything revolves around me. And when I realize that actually I'm insignificant, there is a natural sense of humility that comes into the heart. What we hear from the prayers of Bhaktivinoda Thakur, just as a sample, he writes in his plea to the Lord, "Were you to judge me now, you would find no good qualities. Have mercy and judge me not. Cause me to drink the honey of your lotus feet and thereby deliver this Bhaktivinoda." After full expressions of hopelessness, the light of great hope at last enters his life with the appearance of a pure devotee, the spiritual master sent as Krishna's representative. Bhaktivinoda says, "A wicked mind brought me into this world, O Lord." Bhaktivinoda writes, "But one of your pure and elevated devotees has come to bring me out. Offering him the message of Lord Chaitanya, the spiritual master fully revives the broken spirit of Bhaktivinoda Thakur as he receives the holy name freely distributed in this age by the Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya." So this is mentioned in the Shastra that the devotee feels this sense of ineptitude when it comes to performing any kind of jnana, varnashram, yoga. These are mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu that the devotee, that some people have a sense of qualification for performing these kinds of things, like adhering to the varnashram system, or becoming great meditators or yogis, or becoming great jnanis, and being able to discern matter from spirit and so forth, and in this way become detached from the world. And very specifically, the devotee is saying, I can't do any of these things. I don't have a qualification for any of these. And therefore, the devotee has the ongoing prayer that I'll do whatever Krishna arranges for me. And he thinks the Lord knows best. So could somebody bring me fourth canto, 20th chapter, please? In that regard, one of the acharyas quotes a verse, which I think you really like, because it's a beautiful prayer that you can use daily in your life if you're bold enough to use this prayer, in which we simply say, you decide what's best for me, Krishna, and I'll go along with that. Okay, fourth canto, 20th chapter, 31st verse. Thank you very much. This is from Lord Vishnu's appearance in the sacrificial arena of Prithu Maharaj. Tvanmaya yadhajane isha kandito yet anyad ashasta ratatmano buddha yatacharid bala hitam pitasvayam datatam ivarhasina samihitum. My dear Lord, due to your illusory energy, all living beings in this material world have forgotten their real constitutional position, and out of ignorance they are always desirous of material happiness in the form of society, friendship, and love. Therefore, please do not ask me to take some material benefits from you, but as a father, not waiting for the son's demand, does everything for the benefit of the son, please bestow upon me whatever you think best for me. Here's Srila Prabhupada's purport. It is the duty of the son to depend upon his father without asking anything from him. The good son has faith that the father knows best how to benefit him. Similarly, a pure devotee does not ask anything from the Lord for material benefit, nor does he ask anything for spiritual benefit. The pure devotee is fully surrendered unto the lotus feet of the Lord, and the Lord takes charge of him. As stated in Bhagavad Gita 1866, Aham Tvam Sarva Papi Bhyo Mukshay Shami Masuchaha. The Father knows the necessities of the Son and supplies them, and the Supreme Lord knows the necessities of the living entities and supplies them sumptuously. Therefore, the Ishopanishad states that everything in this material world is complete, Purnam Idam. The difficulty is that due to forgetfulness, the living entities create unnecessary demands and entangle themselves in material activities. What is the difficulty? Due to forgetfulness, the living entities create unnecessary demands. That's a good phrase, unnecessary demands, and entangle themselves in material activities. The result is that there is no end to material activities, life after life. Before us, there are varieties of living entities, and everyone is entangled in transmigrations and activities. Our duty is simply to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead and let him take charge, for he knows what is good for us. Prithu Maharaj therefore tells the Lord that as the Supreme Father, he may elect to bestow whatever he considers beneficial for Prithu Maharaj. That is the perfect position of the living entity. Therefore, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu teaches us in his Shikshashtaka, Na dhanam na janam na sundarin kavitam va jagadisha kamaye mama janmani janmani shvare bhavatad bhakti rahaituki twai. O Almighty Lord, I have no desire to accumulate wealth, nor have I any desire to enjoy beautiful women, nor do I want any number of followers. I only want your causeless devotional service in my life, birth after birth. The conclusion is that the pure devotee should not aspire after any material benefit from devotional service, nor should he be enamored by fruitive activities or philosophical speculation. He should always be engaged favorably in the service of the Lord. That is the highest perfection of life. Okay, let's hear a few comments about this verse and anything we've said so far. Now the microphones are both working, so go ahead and pass them around. Comments? Reflections?
Yes. Maharaj, a lot of times it also happens that we are planning for something spiritual, you know, like going for a yatra or going for a festival, you know, and so many obstacles come our way, you know. Like it happened with me, like in office, everything goes wrong. You know, day after day, I'm waiting for that Friday and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, everything is going against it. It's like, you know, and there is a hope that I'll go, but even on Thursday evening, there is something comes up and, you know, I get to hear, you know, you can't go. You know, then really it comes to the mind, the Supreme Lord really, is he really helping me to, you know, go to the festival or for the right cause? So how to understand this? Ultimately I go, you know, that happens on Friday morning, but till then that anxiety continues.
Yeah, I've noticed that too. And this is Krishna increasing our appreciation and our desire. When we simply get things easily, then we can't appreciate them as much. These Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when you're in the desert and you're dying of thirst, if someone gives you some water, then you can pay millions of dollars for that and you'll really appreciate it. And there's a way in which Krishna puts his devotees in adverse situations so that they can deepen their attachment to him and really appreciate even more, not become subjected to the mind, which I've noticed tends to think of everything as ordinary after some time. Whatever's new becomes old in a few days. I was driving my car on the way here and stuck in a lot of traffic. And then I was thinking, you know, are we going to move ahead or not? And then I thought, you know, it's just a miracle I'm actually driving in a car. I mean, think of the miracle of a car. Who put this together? I just, you know, under normal circumstances, or when I first got in the car, when I got that car, I would have thought that, wow, I'm in a car. I'm driving it. This is a nice car. But later on, I just think, I got to get somewhere else. There's a tendency of the mind to always do that. And when we can take anything for granted. So Krishna assists us in that way.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Yes.
There are two sides to this coin where we are told that our we must want something badly if we are to get it. And then there's this concept of how, you know, even today somebody told me that there's this beautiful Radha's descriptive sloka. Read it and whatever you want, it will happen for you. And I'm thinking, but then the person meant it spiritually. But I'm thinking, so, you know, you should really want something. And then you pray to the Lord. Like Gajendra says, now I'm in difficulty, so I pray to you. You say we shouldn't ask for anything. But right now I'm in difficulty, so I pray to you. So then, are both true that we should really want and pray and ask? And then you're telling us, don't ask, just accept it. So, if I just wake up tomorrow and say, I'll accept whatever you say. So, okay, today's Wednesday. I didn't get to go to class. Okay. And Saturday doesn't happen again. Okay. But I thought that, you know, I should try really hard to get there because that is my priority in life. I reprioritize my life to prioritize Krishna and the process of sadhana and everything else. Now, what you're telling me and what I've learned till now don't match. So can you bring them together so I understand?
Well, certainly to ask Krishna for service or a particular kind of service is a highly advanced spiritual state. this is one of the stages of advancement, when one desires to have a particular kind of service, hankers for more and more service. And desiring to do one's service well is not any kind of material desire. But in the course of doing that, we may be given more or less facility by Krishna, and that has to do, even in the realm of devotional service, with Krishna's way of purifying me. And the acharyas give the example in relationship to, at least Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, in relationship to the verse Tat Te Anukampam Sasamikshamano, that just like a father sometimes gives milk and the other time gives some very bitter medicine. And in both cases, it's to purify the child. So there's a sense in which, of course, we hanker for service. And in the prayer that Srila Prabhupada had cited in the purport, he's giving Lord Chaitanya's perspective, which is that he wants service. He's not saying, I didn't even want that. But he's saying, na dhanam, na janam, na sundarim, kavitam va jagadisha kamai, mama janmani janmanisha, bhavatad bhakti rahaituki twai. I just want to always be engaged in your service. So we should be active and organize our life around that principle of completing our service and moving ahead. But at the same time, we should depend on Krishna for its completion. There are many verses in the 12th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, which you're familiar with, in which Krishna talks about the mood of the devotee, who is not dependent on the ordinary course of activities. He is the same in auspicious or inauspicious circumstances, and so on. And in that sense, the devotee does his service no matter what the Lord puts before him. Bali Maharaj was aware of the fact that Vamana had come as Vishnu because his spiritual master told him that this is Vishnu and so forth. And he said, okay, well, whatever the circumstances, I offer whatever I offered, and I should, because it's for him. And however he deals with me, I'll accept that. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his song, Manasa Deho Geho Yo Kichumor, he says, whatever facility you give me, it's all yours anyway. So you offer it to me. All I desire is that I can go on serving and that I can stay in the association of a devotee. He said, even if I'm born as a bug in my next life, as long as I'm in the house of a devotee, that's okay. So at the same time that we're endeavoring for our service and devotional service and even hankering for it and thinking of ways to increase it, we're also depending on the mercy of the Lord to administer that in a certain way. And certainly when it comes to our material circumstance, which may also be there. In other words, we have our life and our family to take care of and so forth. And when it comes to these things, the devotee also considers the best way to position him or herself so that those things can be used in Krishna's service. But if Krishna decides to take them away, or to rearrange one's life in a certain way, then the attitude of the devotee is that this is Krishna's medicine for me. I'll take it like that. Yes.
The first thing, Maharaj, I've got two Hari Bowls.
Jai.
One is from Bhaktin Joy.
Jai, Bhaktin Joy, thank you.
And the other one is from Bhakta Rajesh Birani from Kingdom of Saudi Arabia.
Oh, Rajesh, thank you for checking in from Saudi Arabia. Hare Krishna.
And I just wanted to share a reflection.
Yes.
So, Maharaj, you had mentioned about the prayer, the difficult prayer, which is, Krishna, you decide what is best for me. And I wanted to share something that happened to me this Monday. So we had a nice and hectic weekend, and my manager had given me some work to do, and I just couldn't find the time to do it. So I was hoping that I'll do that on Monday morning somehow, and then be on time for the meeting where I was supposed to present what she had asked me to do. But Bhakta Noah was also at my home, and I really, really wanted to cook for him because it was Ekadashi, and I wanted to prepare something nice, Ekadashi Prasadam. So it was very early in the morning, and I was trying to cook, so I was cooking, and then I wanted to grind something, the quinoa, to make something special for him. And so I, you know, started putting the quinoa into the mixer, and I couldn't find the lid. And I searched everywhere, and I just couldn't find it. And I was like, Krishna, why are you doing this to me? You know, I have such a shortage of time, but I really want to cook for him. And you know, why can't I find the lid? And I don't know, from some, and I'm in an extreme mode of passion when I'm in the kitchen in the morning. But somewhere there was a little bit of mode of goodness, and I just said, you know, Krishna, you must have something good in this that you're doing this to me. That thought came. And then, you know, within seconds of that, Bhakta Noah walked into the kitchen and said, I'm going to keep the complete fast. I'm not going to eat anything. So I was like, look at that. Krishna didn't allow me to put that stuff and, you know, mix it and, you know, create more work for me.
Very interesting. Srivas.
So, Prabhuji, my understanding is that there is a dichotomy in the devotee's heart with respect to material and the spiritual facilities which are offered by Krishna. When the Lord says, I'll give you some material facility, devotee says, no, I don't want anything. And some places the devotee says, I am not a businessman, or some places. So they are, as much as they are averse to not accepting material opulences from the Lord, they are proportionately eager to have the service. Is that my understanding right? Or please correct me if I kind of wrong.
Yeah, in fact, Prabhupada mentions that there's a competition between Krishna and the devotee, where the devotee is trying to serve Krishna and Krishna is trying to serve the devotee. And of course, if someone's focused on their service, then whatever material facility comes, the devotee accepts it. Prabhupada used to point this out, that oftentimes impersonalists would turn away from money if it was offered. Oh, we don't touch that. But he would say, no, okay, give it to me. I'll take it. Because immediately he would use it to glorify Krishna, to expand the kirtan and the sankirtan movement all over the world.
My specific thing was regarding the verse which we read about Maharaj Prithu not accepting anything material from the Lord, or the tendency to not accept. I was trying to kind of understand or correlate with Lavanya Mataji's comment. There is an eagerness on one hand, and when the material facility is offered, it's that it's up to you how much you want to offer, what you want. You know what's best for me. I myself don't know whether not accepting something material from you is really good for my spiritual life in the long run or not. So you decide. I'll be always be favorably inclined to serve you, but whatever material facilities come along the way, that's your choice.
Yeah, the devotee has to keep that mood. I mean, Prabhupada said it because he thought that he would make a lot of money in order to spread Krishna consciousness. But then he said, but Krishna made me come as a penniless person to the West, with no facility. But he accepted that also. Whatever facility Krishna offers, the devotee says, okay, this must be Krishna's plan, you know. And also, the devotee's praying like that. Whatever you want to arrange for me, I'll accept it in that way.
But at the very time, he was still working very hard to serve the Lord.
Yeah, Prabhupada said that it's not that Krishna told Arjuna that I'm the Supreme Personality of Godhead and I'm going to do everything. You sit down in the chariot and smoke ganja. No, he told Arjuna that you should get up and fight. And Krishna empowered him to do that. And when Arjuna understood that that's what Krishna wanted him to do, he took whatever facility he needed to, including his expertise, and he engaged it as much as possible. And there's another verse from the 10th canto. May I have this also? 10th canto, 87th chapter. Let's look at this one. 10:87:17. So Yeah, the devotee is saying that I have asha or hope for attaining the Lord, but it's not motivated by prema, but by desire for my own happiness, since I have deeply rooted desires for personal enjoyment, which are difficult to remove. This verse, this word comes up, achejamula. They're deeply rooted. So devotee may be have some impetus for devotional service, be motivated, but he's saying it's not by pure love. I have these deeply rooted desires. Then what should I do? I continue to hanker, to expect, to hope, because I think that you can turn material desire into prema, since you are extra merciful to those who are deficient. That means, this is a paraphrase of the first verse that we read. In other words, the devotee recognizes that I'm not pure and I have no qualification whatsoever, so what can I do? And the great hope comes in that he realizes that Krishna is capable of changing that whatever desire which is tinged with impurity into a pure desire. So he goes on and he expects that this is what will happen. Kirata hunanda pulinda pulkasha bhira shumba yavanaka sada ya yene chapapa yadapashra yashraya shudyanti tasmai pravavishnabe namaha. Shukadeva Goswami says, and it's in your shloka book, nice verse to take a look at, that the personalities from all different places around the world who are conditioned in different ways. Pages?
200.
Page 200. We're all on the even numbers tonight. Last was 400. This is 200. Kirata hunandra pulinda pulkasha abhira shumba yavana kasadaya yene cha papa yadapashraya shraya shudyanti tasmai pravavishnave namaha. And in this verse, Shukadeva is listing all the different personalities who are outside the varnashram system, who have no culture according to progressive values of spiritual life. But still he says they can all become perfect and purified because of the power of Vishnu that comes through the pure devotees of the Lord. So hearing statements like this and many others, the power of the Lord's holy name, for instance, to purify one of all sinful reactions and to change the heart, the devotee hears these and understands that I should have great hope, that even though I'm a hopeless case, seemingly hopeless, because of the power of the holy name, because of the power of the Vaishnavas, I can be transformed. And this is a very exciting prospect that it could happen for me also. And the devotee keeps that hope within his heart constantly. I think that you can turn material desire into prema, since you are extra merciful to those who are deficient. So he's also recognizing that especially the runt of the litter, sometimes when puppies come out, or you know, there's a baby of some kind that's completely helpless, then everyone gives special care. So the devotee thinks like that also. I really need your help because I can't do anything. I'm completely helpless. Yes.
I just wanted to say I'm from Andhra.
From Andhra.
Maharaj, I also got two text messages.
Yes, text.
So one is from Noah.
From Noah.
My comment, yeah. So he says, Haribol Gurudev, this is Noah. I like the verse about trusting Krishna like a father in fourth canto.
Thank you,
and,
Noah.
And Bhakta Rajesh again, he says, taking whatever Krishna sends without fault finding. Is there something
taking
like?
Whatever Krishna sends without fault finding. Nice. Beautiful comments. Thank you very much. And here's another verse that I mined out of the commentaries on this particular subject matter. This is from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto, 87th chapter, 17th verse. It's from the prayers of the personified Vedas. Prayers of the personified Vedas. And this verse says, Dhritaya eva swasanat yasu. Dhritaya eva swasant yasu brito yadi te nuvida. Mahad aham adayo dum. Astrijan yad anugrahataha. Purushovido vayotra charamunma mayadishuya. Sad asata param tvam atayad. Eshvashesham ritam. Only if they become your faithful followers are those who breathe actually alive. Otherwise, their breathing is like that of a bellows. It is by your mercy alone that the elements, beginning with the Mahatattva and false ego, created the egg of this universe. Among the manifestations known as Annamaya, and so forth, you are the ultimate one, entering within the material coverings along with the living entity and assuming the same forms as those he takes, distinct from the gross and subtle material manifestations, you are the reality underlying them all. And the feeling of this verse is to understand how Krishna is all-powerful and he can change any situation, he can change the heart of anyone. And therefore, the devotee has hope, understanding this point. And hope in general is an interesting topic. The word means the recognition within the human heart that something better is attainable. Should I read it again? The recognition within the human heart that something better is obtainable. That's a nice feeling. In fact, human beings can have this very deep sense of hope because coming out of the animal life, the human becomes aware of the fact that he exists. And what is that existence? It's something extraordinary. It's consciousness, which is not describable in material terms. And it's something that can't be denied. I was thinking about this the other day on my walk, my morning walk, that consciousness is something that cannot be denied. It's that which cannot be denied. I had heard that statement previously, and it came to the front of my consciousness because I like to be alone in the morning. Unfortunately, there's other people sometimes walking their dogs and things. Actually, I don't mind them so much, but it's kind of interesting. But still, there's, you know, when you get up early in the morning and you're in that quiet bliss of just being by yourself with the holy name and hearing and chanting and things like that. So I like to go out for a walk before the sun rises and chant a little bit in the park. Washington Park is near my house, and it's a nice park. But I go out there, and I notice that there's so few people out there. If someone walks near me like I'm crossing their path, that there's always this stress. Should I look them in the eye or should I pretend like I don't see them? And they're thinking the same thing, because if they do, then I'll have to say, good morning. It's like, I don't want to say good morning. I just want to keep chanting. I mean, I'm not antisocial, I hope. But it's just a feeling early in the morning like that. So I was thinking the other day that why don't I feel like that with the bench or the road or anything else, even the non-movable living entities that aren't fully conscious. I don't feel like that so much. But when I cross another human being who has these windows, you know, that look out and it's like, okay, you saw me. I have to say something now. I either have to look away or, you know, say hi. And so I was thinking, you can't deny consciousness. Something you can't deny. And even when you deny it, it's an act of consciousness. Denial is an act of consciousness. So it's something that becomes prominent when one comes to the human form of life. You can actually look at it. You can observe it. In other species of life, according to the Vedas, there's this ability isn't available. So consciousness is that which cannot be denied. And the recognition within the human heart that something is better and attainable. There's a sense that humans have that one can attain something marvelous, and that's why architects and artists and athletes and everyone's trying to do a little bit better and go a little bit further. And Prabhupada talks about how the deep absorption in poetry and literature and on these types of things is an exhibition of this desire of the soul to touch the aesthetic world and come to a higher level. And also, of course, endeavors to go farther into space, go further into the water, drill through tunnels and so forth. There's a sense of the human spirit that we can do more. We can do more. And through science and other kinds of endeavors, people have a feeling that maybe we can attain something wonderful. And, of course, ours is a different approach altogether because, as Sariputta Prabhu points out in his brilliant talks about science in regards to the Origin magazine, and I distributed a few of his recordings. All of you should have them. They're really fantastic, and you should hear them regularly. But he points out that the scientific approach is that we'll pry the answers out of nature. Whether she likes it or not, we're getting them. We're going in there and we're going to surgically remove the answers from you. Whereas in bhakti and any kind of truly self-effacing spiritual path, one takes the position that who am I to pry them out of anyone? I'm insignificant. And therefore, I will develop an appreciation for the fact that there's a higher power. And I'll become humble. Amanitvam, adambitvam. Why are these the first two elements that Krishna lists in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita as the stepping stones in the path to knowledge, to become humble and without false ego and so forth? So hope grows within the heart of a very conscious being. You were going to say something? Yeah.
This is regarding the point that you said that Krishna can change material desire into prema.
Yeah.
But at this stage, the mode of prayer or even hope is like so low that even sometimes you pray that let the red light not fall so that I be on time in some place or something like that. So unless the consciousness develops to that high level, like how would it turn to prema? Because even in devotional service, I do it with great enthusiasm because of I want to publicize it, and the appreciation that comes out of it is a motivating factor. So the moment the value is not based on that, there is no motivating factor, at least at this
Krishna's
stage.
Krishna's expert. You have to trust him. And even if you don't trust him, he's still expert. And there's a way in which in our lives, if we stay close to the process of devotional service, one way or the other, that Krishna knows how to bring us along. And we should trust that fact, that somehow or other stay Krishna conscious, somehow or other stay alive in Krishna consciousness. And Krishna knows how to create situations in our lives so that we can actually have a teachable moment. We can actually really experience what it's like to cry out with real desire to know him and to give us the right kind of association. We should pray for that. And that's why this prayer is so important that we introduced earlier from the fourth canto from Maharishi Prithu. But if we're not in that situation and we continue to perform devotional service, then we can see from the example of Dhruva Maharaj that he was full of desire for attaining something material, a material position, and he approached the Lord, and then he changed his mind, and he said, I really don't want that at all. And of course, Krishna gave it to him anyway, even though he didn't want it afterwards. It didn't seem attractive to him at all. But Krishna gave it to him at the same time. So he'll adjust our life in such a way that we can have
just that. Prema come, even if when I'm chanting, if we are not asking for prema, is it like Krishna will somehow make it so that we get to that stage, or we should really pray for it like that?
Well, we should chant and avoid the offenses. We should do that much. And by chanting the holy name and avoiding the offenses, then naturally we'll have revelation. Because we're not trying to add anything, we're only trying to adjust the situation that we're in now. And that happens quite nicely through keeping proximity to the holy name and doing it in such a way that we're trying to be non-offensive. This is the clearing stage of chanting the holy name, is to think consciously, how can I avoid offenses? And if we're trying to do that, then we'll progress to that point. And the desire will grow within the heart for this kind of advanced devotional service, especially by association with advanced devotees. We should try to keep the association of advanced devotees, because there's a way in which, by their association, we'll also gain this kind of eagerness and purification. So, regarding hope in general, as the recognition within the human heart that something better is attainable, some people have a desire or have a sense that something materially is better and attainable, and therefore they're trying for that. This is also a kind of hope, isn't it? And reading Vishakha's, that is Vishakha Devi Dasi, a disciple of Prabhupada, had written a long time ago an article about this topic. She quoted a couple of verses about hope, and one of them was from the Bhagavad Gita in the 9th chapter. We can move these chairs back a little bit so you all feel a little bit closer. If nobody's going to sit in the chairs, you can move them back and then you can move up. And Mukharvin, make sure everyone has an asana to sit on. They're comfortable and happy. I just want you all to feel like you're part of the group. Those chairs seem to block the energy a little bit. You might know this verse from the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter, and Krishna says, you can leave a couple of them out just in case somebody wants to sit on a chair. Mogasha mogakarmano mogagyan vichechasa rakshasima surim chaiva prakitim mohinam mohinim shritaha. This verse, Krishna also talks about hope. Mogasha mogakarmano mogagyan vichechasa rakshasim asurim chaiva prakitim mohinim shritaha. That people who have intense, well, they have, what Krishna's talking about is a materialistic mindset and or demoniac mindset. That is, they're not interested in God at all. They're interested in only sense gratification and so forth, and they try to get it without the help of God. So he says that their hopes will be baffled. Mogasha means to be baffled. It means that whatever endeavor they make, when they don't try to take shelter of God, then they'll be bewildered. Mogasha, mogakarmano, mogagyana vichetasa, rakrasim asurim chaiva, prakritim mohinim shritaha. You have it? Oh, we missed the even number. Okay, 109. And the verse number is?
912.
It's 912 in the Bhagavad Gita. You might want to just look in the Bhagavad Gita. And in the Gita, it's on page 416. And I'll say the verse and then please repeat. Mogasha mogakarmano.
Mogasha mogakarmano.
Mogagyana vichetasaha.
Rakshasim asurim chaiva.
prakritim mohinim shritaha. So you'll notice that the first word in this verse, moga asha. So what we're talking about tonight is ashabandha, or this being bound by hope. So there are other people that are bound by hope also. But this hope is baffled. So moga asha means baffled in their hopes. So we're hopeful. Conscious beings are hopeful. We're always hopeful about something. So the translation of this verse, those who are thus bewildered are attracted by demonic and atheistic views. In that deluded condition, their hopes for liberation, their fruitive activities, and their culture of knowledge are all defeated. So people are hoping for many things which are separate from God. And in which case, Krishna says, you'll be baffled because of that. So it's interesting to note that. And in the realm of hopefulness, actually, we depend on it to stay alive. Evidence from various incidents in the world. Vishakha points out in her excellent paper, in Man's Search for Meaning, which is a title of a book, Holocaust survivor Viktor Frankl writes that the rate of deaths in the concentration camp increased after Hanukkah, even though there was no change in the camp's already horrible conditions. Frankl writes, "Woe to him who saw no more sense in his life, no aim, no purpose, and therefore no point of carrying on. He was soon lost." In other words, there was a hopefulness that, you know, there was some rumor that was going around in the concentration camp that come Hanukkah, that there was going to be some kind of liberation and the people would be let out. And then Hanukkah came and went, and then a lot of people just died. They gave up hope. And it wasn't because some bacteria came through or anything like that. It's a state of that keeps us alive, having that hope. Similarly, in her seminal study on death and dying, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross writes, "If a patient stops expressing hope, it is usually a sign of imminent death." So often people, when they have something to live for, they can rally and they can continue to live. But once that hope is gone, they just give up and they leave the body and so forth. So then there is spiritual hope, or ashabandha, which means bound by hope. One thinks, because I'm trying my best to follow the routine principles of devotional service, some way or other, I will be able to approach the Lord and will certainly receive his favor. Surely I will go back home, back to Godhead. So this is wanted. We should understand from hearing the Shastra, hearing Krishna's statements over and over again, where he says, very quickly, you'll attain perfection. And just by doing devotional service, you'll never be lost, and so forth. And if you just understand me, then upon leaving this body, you'll go back home, back to Godhead. These should fill us with hope, even though at the same time, there is one too many adjustments. There's a sense that I'm wholly unqualified for this. So this kind of dichotomy is there, that I feel unqualified, but still, because Krishna is so wonderful, and there's hope, there's still hope that this can happen. And so this kind of intense feeling and hopefulness that Krishna will deliver one comes into play. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 5.5.15, there's this statement. If one is serious about going back home, back to Godhead, he must consider the mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the summum bonum, and the chief aim of life. So for bhakti yogis, the idea is that I'm not doing it by my own power. I don't have any qualification. And this is the ideal situation which Queen Kunti mentions, Janmaishvarar Shruta Shribir, Edamanamadapuman, Naivar Hatyabidatum Vai, Twama Kinchana Gocharam. She says that one who is Akinchana Gocharam is the one who's qualified for Krishna's mercy. not someone who thinks that I have youth, I have wealth, power, influence, and so forth, and therefore I'm qualified for devotional service, but someone who gives up all sense of qualification and simply depends completely on the mercy of the Lord is a worthy candidate. Points.
Maharaj, yes. I have a question. Maharaj, after we become a devotee, you know, or in the practice of devotional service, we start recognizing every event or recognizing Krishna's mercy coming in different events. Right? I mean, want to do something. Oh, Krishna. Oh, my God. This is, Krishna is favorably doing it for me. So we basically recognize. But people who have not yet taken up to devotional service, maybe it's also happening for them, but the only difference is they're not focused on recognizing what Krishna is doing for them. So the question I have is, can really anybody on this planet go away from Krishna? Because Krishna is anyway doing it for, you know, for a devotee as well as a non-devotee.
Vritirtam yat pratyeta na pratyeta chatmani tad vidyadatmano mayam yata bhaso yatatamaha. Krishna answers this question to Brahma. He says that whatever you see that's not in connection with me is my illusory energy. It's maya. It's that which is not. So not all facts are true. There are facts which are not true. That means anything that appears to be true, or you can say it exists and it's a fact, but if you don't connect it to Krishna, if you don't see the connection to Krishna, it's not true. Ritirtam yat pratiyata, and it has no value. Has no value and it's not true. You can't take the lesson from it. You're not gaining anything from that, ultimately, because you've lost the connection. 204, we're still on an even number. You can look in the shloka book at this wonderful verse from the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam. Ritirtam yat pratiyata. Are we there? Okay. We'll say together. Ritirtam yat pratiyeta na pratiyeta chatmani tadvidyadatmano mayam yatabhaso yatatamaha. O Brahma, whatever appears to be of any value, if it is without relation to me, has no reality. Know it is my illusory energy, that reflection which appears to be in darkness. And if you want some special thing to do next to Kadashi, I recommend that you read all the Chatur Shloki, that's four, and their purports with your family or with somebody who's interested in hearing. And you'll be amazed. Those purports on the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam are epic and they're beautiful. So someone may be experiencing reversals in their life or various circumstances, but because they're not seeing it in relationship to the Supreme Lord, they haven't made that connection, then this is considered to be maya and not helpful. Of course, in the macro sense, maya is another name for mercy. And there's a way that ultimately, she's meant to reform us so that we come to the point of saying that, no mas, I want to surrender. How's the temperature in here? Are you all okay? Are you warm? It's a little warm and muggy. And who? Hansapriya. Hansapriya is checking in with a text, and she says,
she was talking about hope, and she said that coming to hear and chant on Wednesday classes, we get hope.
You get hope from hearing and chanting, that's for sure. That definitely when we come together to hear and chant, and if you do this every day, then you'll stay on the hopeful platform, because constantly we're being discouraged by the material energy. There are ways in which we become depleted through circumstances in life, through the power of our own mind, which can be wicked. If we take the time to purify the intelligence and fortify the mind with Krishna conscious katha and hearing the holy name, each morning. This is the benefit of the morning program. Sadhana. You have to do sadhana. It's very pleasing. Then your hope level for going back to Godhead will remain at a very high level. Harivamsa Prabhu, yes. Here comes the microphone.
Prabhuji, I have a question, and this is on the lines of some of the dichotomy things which Shivas Pandit Prabhuji was also pointing out, like how at the same time we feel unqualified, but at the same time we feel that there is hope. And in many places we come across this, even Achintya Bheda Bhed philosophy is in one sense understanding two different ends. Prabhupada also used to mention that you... The greatness would be, I don't know exactly how the quote is, but if you can have two opposite notions in your mind at the same time. And sometimes you want to exceedingly be united in the service to Guru and Krishna, but at the same time also be contented with the fact that we have to serve in separation. So I want to ask the question, how can we develop this attitude of having these dichotomies and two different of seemingly opposite notions at the same time in the mind? And it appears very baffling and too overwhelming and daunting also at the same time. So if you can please...
Well, ultimately, Krishna consciousness is not an intellectual activity, but it's an experience of the heart. For instance, when we actually... experience for ourselves how Krishna is maintaining our life. We're not just reading it on a page and thinking, oh, that's nice. But if we see it for ourselves, how he's, and we experience how I'm intimately connected to Krishna as his part and parcel, how he's not just maintaining my body, my mind, but also myself. He's the self of myself. That realization is not intellectual, but it happens in the course of purification and one's communion with Krishna through intensely chanting the holy name, serving, associating with advanced devotees, performing all the different aspects of devotional service. One has a spiritual experience and realization, which is fortifying in the sense that we feel, although the dichotomy is there, at once we feel satisfied at the same time. And there's a sense of separation from Krishna, but union at the same time, which is inexplicable intellectually. Yes.
Maharaj, I had asked a similar question of Mukunda Datta Prabhu when he had come here. And he made a very powerful statement, which I recollect. He was saying, the very fact that you are trying to analyze everything and resolve all these apparent contradictions and these dichotomies is trying to play Krishna. That you try to get everything out with your mind, with your intellectual capabilities, you try to resolve everything. That is trying to play Krishna.
Yeah, nice point. And Brahma, who's the most intelligent, says, just give up. Jnane prayasa mudupasya namanta eva jivanti sanmukaritam bhavadiya vartam stanestita shutikatam tanavan manobir ye prayaso jitadiso Pyasi Tais Trilokyam. Page number? 255. Please have a look. And the shloka number is? 10.14.3. That's Canto 10, Chapter 14, Verse number 3. Jnani Prayasam Udapasya Namanta Eva. So in this verse, Brahma is saying that one shouldn't try to figure out Krishna. Just serve him. And you can serve with your body, mind, and heart. And he recommends hearing. submissive hearing, stane stita shutikatan tanavan manobir. It's palpable. If one spends time hearing about Krishna, first of all, there will be a feeling of well-being, because the anxieties that come into our everyday life come on the platform of the mind, and hearing from Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, each morning before entering the fray of material life fortifies us from that. And also, there's a sense in which there's an attraction that develops over time, which is inexplicable. And Krishna reveals himself through that sound vibration, and one experiences it for himself. So yes, a nice point. There's a way in which the intelligence wants to dominate everything. We want to be able to, wait a minute, how did I fall down in the first place? This goes on all the time, trying to put it in a box. Unless I can put it in a box, I want it on a spreadsheet. If I can't have it on a spreadsheet, you know, I'm not participating. Just give up and hear from the Shastra over a long period of time. Of course, it doesn't mean that we can't have spiritual discussion and ask questions about things. That's not what it means. Because Siddhanta Bulya Chitta Na Kara Alash, Iha Krishna Lag Surit Manash. Kaviraj Goswami says, we should discuss the Siddhanta, but it should be done in a way in which we're trying to deepen our love for Krishna and our appreciation for Krishna and understanding. You can use the intelligence for that. The intelligence can ask questions and so forth, but let it be, if it's not forthcoming, if it doesn't come right away, just be patient and wait for it to come through the process of devotional service. Yes. Another text has come in.
It's a question, Maharaj. From Shyamroop Das Prabhu from Sacramento. How to balance between one's own endeavor and expecting Krishna's mercy, as the tendency is to expect more from Krishna in the neophyte stage?
Yes. Well, we have... we have to do our level best and then leave the rest to Krishna. And when it comes to maintaining our material life, we do it by cultivating an understanding of how Krishna is maintaining me. This is surrender. One should see how it is that I'm being maintained by Krishna, and I'm being protected by Krishna also. And it's not that advanced devotees fully depend on Krishna. That's their particular attitude in life. Like Madhavendra Puri, he just went anywhere and accepted whatever Krishna gave in any particular time. You want to read the question one more time? Make sure I understood it.
How to balance between one's own endeavor and expecting Krishna's mercy, as the tendency is to expect more from Krishna in the neophyte stage?
Yeah, so I don't know if I agree with the premise, Shyamroopa.
Yes, Maharaj.
Because in an advanced stage, devotees expect everything from Krishna. For instance, in Vrindavan, you'll hear many stories about when demons attack, the cowherd boys will simply say, well, Krishna will take care of it. When they saw Agasura, for instance, they were on their way to a picnic in the forest, and they suddenly saw this gigantic python blocking the road. And it was unusual because its upper lip touched the sky. It looked like a huge mountain cave. There was winds coming from the belly of the beast. And some of the boys said, that's just a statue. And others said, no, it's real. And they started running away. And there was some discussion about whether it was real or a fake, because anything had happened in Vrindavan when Krishna's there. And they decided, no, it is real. But they said, so who cares? Look what Krishna did to Bakasura. We were standing there and, you know, he bifurcated the demon. So let's just go inside. And so they walked right into the mouth of the demon, right on its serpent tongue, and they were going into the belly of Agasura. And Krishna was watching and thinking, what's going on? And they looked at his smiling face and they were clapping and laughing. And they were thinking, what can a snake do to us? We have Krishna here. So pure devotees are always depending on Krishna at every moment. I think neophytes, on the other hand, have a tendency to think that, you know, I need to take care of this. But there's a way of gradually coming to understand how Krishna is protecting me at every minute. And this is the process of surrender.
Be that in the neophyte stage we expect so many material things from Krishna, that I want this, I want a car or a bungalow or something like that, or is that also not considered?
In the neophyte stage, wanting material things?
Yeah, from Krishna, like Atto Jignyasu Rattarthi, in that sense.
Yeah, that's definitely there. A person who's asking Krishna for material circumstance and so forth. Pardon me?
Maybe because for one's own enjoyment, is that what makes the difference?
Yeah, that would definitely be a neophyte or a beginning stage.
But Guru Maharaj, the question also rotates to a different point. Like, when we're neophytes and we try to follow the four regulations, there are certain things that we can do and certain things we realize we're not able to do. For example, I was very confident with the tea part because they told me, you can give up tea. And I said, yeah, well, that's okay, I can do tea. I couldn't do tea. I could do everything but tea. And I realized at some point, I tried really hard, and then I think that that's the point where I say, well, Krishna, this is just a little too much for me, so you have to do this. The tea's not going away. And I realized we do that a lot of times. I still have things that I say, oh, you know what, Krishna, that movie's really calling me. You work on me. This is as good as I am. But I noticed at one point, even with the tea, there was a day when there was a trigger and my hand was literally, I was holding the cup and my hand was literally pouring that hot, fabulous tea down the drain and my mind was talking and I was just watching myself. I was saying, that is good tea. And my hand was pouring it down the drain. I stopped that day and I thought, that's it. That's your call. You got to stop because it doesn't get better than that. You're literally pouring it down the drain. But sometimes, that's Krishna's mercy. With a neophyte, it happens that you something triggers you to let go. Otherwise, we can't. So when the question came that, you know, how much is our effort and how much is our dependency on Krishna, I think that it's person to person. Krishna judges you. And then, you know, if he realizes you've really tried and your innate nature is not strong enough, but you want to change, then Krishna does give you the strength that you did not personally possess.
Yeah, that's certainly true. If we have sincerity, then Krishna will help us in many ways that we weren't aware of or expecting. It's also to ask Krishna, please help me remove certain material desires, is actually a very advanced stage. Because a neophyte stage would be to deny them and simply justify them. But an advanced stage is to realize that I do have anartas, or unwanted things within my heart, and they have the strength. It takes great strength to say, Krishna, please remove them. Because there's a way in which the mind might just say, well, it's not that bad. Other people, they're just a little too enthusiastic anyway. And probably they won't be able to keep their vow anyhow. So why should I even start? This is a very neophyte stage. But a more advanced stage is when you're actually confronting them and then praying to Krishna. You're taking a risk because you're putting yourself out there and saying, you know, please remove this. and what might happen. And there's a chain of reactions in the mind and the heart, you know, from all the different desires that are there. But if you give this up, then this is going to go, and so many things. Srivas Prabhu?
You just say that these regulations are too extreme. It's not
what's that?
Yeah.
Or, you know, somebody might just pull others down. Those Mangalarti go in 16 round chanting, you know, who do they think they are? That's not such a big deal. Instead of trying to glorify the advancement of others, someone will remain in their position and say it's not such a great thing. Yes, Sudeep.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. This is actually following on to what Lavanya Mataji was also saying. One thing what I have noticed about myself is if any challenge comes or anything at work comes, I don't think of Krishna until I can't handle it myself. This is what I've noticed. I'm all gung-ho onto trying to do it myself. And obviously there comes to a point where I just can't do it. And then I go, okay, raise my hands, please do it. And it happens. But when there is any service opportunity that I get, immediately the first thing is praying to Krishna. I'm not able to understand or make out much out of that. Why is it this way in one case? I mean, it's not the level of difficulty of those. I just don't know what to make out of it and how should I improve. That no matter what it is, whether it is a material challenge that comes or whether it is any service opportunity, that no matter what, I first start praying to Krishna.
Well, the best thing is to not stop praying to Krishna by continuing to chant Hare Krishna. And I've noticed this on Sankirtan. There's a way in which, going out on book distribution, if I start doing well, I can think that, okay, I know how to do this, or the mind can go in a number of different directions. But if I continue the Maha Mantra while I'm distributing and in between when I'm distributing books, I come back to the center and remember that actually Krishna is maintaining and protecting me and giving me the ability to do whatever I'm doing. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna, Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu, always stay in touch with me. Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Mama Nusmara Yujache. Always remember me. Always remember me constantly. Tasmat Sarveshu Kaleshu Mam Anusmara Yujacha Mayarpita Mano Budhir Mami Vaishatya Samshayaha. And he said, go out and fight. And then in the purport, Prabhupada says this means you should continually chant Hare Krishna. Prabhupada says it a lot, actually. And there's a way in which some, you know, the mind might say, you know, constantly chant Hare Krishna. Well, you know, that's not reasonable. How am I going to? But we can endeavor for that, to always chant, or at least we should chant very intensely every day. And that combination of living in the world and going through the experiences that we have to experience with the realization that Krishna is in his name, and the effect of associating with pure transcendence, with the personality of God and himself in his holy name, that will begin to bring us to realization that whatever we're doing at all times is actually dependent on Krishna.
Thank you very much.
So this topic of hope, we were talking about how people give up hope, even on the material side. And then we talked about spiritual hope, and that we should keep Krishna and his mercy as the chief aim of our life, getting Krishna's mercy. So if we have no other duty to do except for get Krishna's mercy. How do you do that? Concentrate on that. And also develop the awareness that my advancement in spiritual life is 100% dependent on Krishna's mercy. Think like that. It's 100% dependent on Krishna's mercy, nothing else. So also in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna in the 16th chapter talks about Ashapasha. And that means, pasha means a trap. So there's also, this is in the demoniac qualities. Krishna's talking about ashapasha. People are hoping for material advancement and so forth. And Krishna calls this the trap of hope. It's the wrong kind of hope. It's not hope based on getting Krishna's mercy, but it's hope on based on my ability. And this is altogether possible. People can develop a whole philosophy about how there's no God, it's all simply my own endeavor and so forth, and may try hard to make advancement in life, and this is a trap. So we have to transform our hope. The tendency to hope is always there. We have to be hopeful, otherwise we can't live. That's what we live for. We're hoping for something better. Otherwise, what are you going to do? You'll simply become a dysfunctional person if you don't have some hope. And, of course, in advertising, I always notice people are always trying to give me hope that if you just take this or keep flying on this airline, things might get better. In fact, they tell me they definitely will. I saw a little clip a while back when it was talking about the power of suggestion, and there was, in the old days, when the cigarette companies could do whatever they wanted in this country, they used to do these advertisements. Camel Cigarettes had an ad campaign that was doctors smoking cigarettes, and they say, "More doctors smoke Camel." And they'd have a doctor wearing his white lab coat and the nurse standing there, you know, holding the stethoscope and the whole thing. The doctor's enjoying a Camel cigarette. "More doctors smoke Camels." And it's preposterous, and it's diabolical. But at the same time, people had some hope that, you know, I don't know, maybe if I smoke a cigarette, I'll be healthier because doctors, they prefer these kind of cigarettes and so forth. Whenever I get on United Airlines, the CEO of the airline always comes on the screen. As soon as you get on and you're taking off, you're on the taxiway, he says, we're putting billions of dollars into this airline. Meanwhile, there's a screw sticking you in the side. And it's like, it's going to be great, you know. I think, all right, I'll try it one more year, you know, because they give hope. So we're buoyed by this idea that there's going to be something for us in this world. Jarasandha, he attacked Krishna over and over and over again, and he and his armies were slaughtered. And each time when he would walk away dejected, and his ministers would come up to him and they say, "You know, that was a fluke. You know, you're very powerful. They cheated. You could have won. Try again." And over and over again. How many times? 17 times. So this repeated birth and death, it's going on with this hope that maybe I'll just get it. And you never quite make it to the finish line, and then you die. And then you try again in next life. Keep trying, keep trying, keep trying. So the Shastra is speaking to us saying, you've tried it already. You've tried everything. You've hoped for this thing that you never really got. Wake up and hope for something which is much better. Get what your heart really desires. So transformation of hope is a very powerful thing, because if you have this hope, and you know, we could also say it means faith, but we're talking in a very specific way about hope. But the definition is that everything's in the holy name. Everything's in devotional service. If I do devotional service as my occupation, what will I be lacking? Nothing. If I do my occupation but I neglect devotional service, what will I get? Nothing. So this growing hope that by association with advanced devotees, I'll be able to become advanced. By chanting Hare Krishna, by performing sadhana, I'll actually become happy and be able to have real personal service to the devotees and to Krishna. This is very exciting. And this is what motivates one in devotional service. So we should transform hope. That's a very important thing to do. Vidura said to Dhritarashtra, remember Dhritarashtra was very much entangled in the life of the palace. And you know, it's very interesting because he was getting old and he was coughing up all kinds of, you know, phlegm. and his teeth were falling out, and the signs were there that he was going to die, but he was still holding on to it. Why? He had hope. So what transformed that? The great devotee Vidura came along and started speaking to him. He said, "It is the Supreme Personality of Godhead as eternal time, Kala, that has approached us all. Whoever is under the influence of Supreme Kala must surrender his most dear life, and what to speak of other things such as wealth, honor, children, land, and home." So the first step in transforming hope is to see that Krishna, in his form as time, will take away everything material from us. Don't put your hope in the material world. And become detached. Again, Vidura is reminding Dhritarashtra, "You've become blind from your very birth, and recently you have become hard of hearing. Your memory is shortened and your intelligence is disturbed. Your teeth are loose, your liver is defective, and you're coughing up mucus. Alas, how powerful are the hopes of a living being to continue his life. Despite your unwillingness to die and your desire to live, even at the cost of honor and prestige, your miserly body will certainly dwindle like an old garment." So on one side, we should give up hope in the material world, but we need to transform it and transfer it to Krishna, develop a trust and get confidence in Krishna's teachings. See that they're viable. Yes, Trishab.
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. When you said that, I just thought of that. Earlier in the Vedic culture, people, you know, they had this period from 25 to 50 when they were more in material life, and then they used to retire into vanprastha and then sannyas, kind of, you know, more spiritual. But now we see in the Kali Yuga that people, it's getting more passionate, and people just continue till 60, 70, and they don't know any better to do. So like people who are working, they continue to work till 70, 75, so, and they just don't know anything else. So
that's true. Unless they get information from outside the system, and then it's possible. That's why we distribute so much knowledge, because it does transform people.
Maharaj, I would like to share something I kind of suddenly remembered about when you were saying. I heard this from Sridhama Prabhu, you know, about an incident that he told that happened in Barasana. He was walking, I'll put it very short, he was walking in Barasana, you know, on a yatra or something, and then he was passing through some old houses, and then he saw a young boy sleeping on a cart, mid-afternoon. And then he was like, there is a little slang Hindi in this, but I'll explain you. You know, he went and he told that boy, "What are you doing? You are young. You should be working at this time. This is the age to work hard. And you're sleeping in front of your house on a cart, you know." He was suggesting that village boy. And that village boy got up and he made a comment in Hindi, you know, and Sridhama Prabhu was stunned, you know. I'll tell it in Hindi, and then he said, "Jisko kaam hai, usko kaam hai." You know, mujhe kaam nahi hai, so I can sleep, you know. He meant jisko kaam. Kaam also means work, and kaam also means lust. So he was saying, whoever has lust, he has work. I don't have any lust. I'm happy with what Krishna is giving, so I'm sleeping. So then he was stunned, you know. I was remembering how much hope he had on Krishna's mercy.
Of course,
I don't know if it's setting the wrong context.
Work is one thing, but work for Krishna is another. Prabhupada used to say that our temples are not free hotels for sleeping and eating and like that, you know. So devotees are even more motivated than materialists when it comes to work and so forth. So developing trust in the Lord, if we trust Krishna, we will gain confidence in his teachings. By his grace, we will understand that we are tiny spiritual beings completely dependent on him, and we will want to serve him and his servants more than we want anything else. And Vidura, again, says to Dhritarashtra, "He is certainly a first-class man who awakens and understands, either by himself or from others, the falsity and misery of this material world, and thus leaves home and depends fully on the personality of Godhead residing in his heart." So, devotional service is this process of transferring our hope from the material world to Krishna and strengthening that more and more. Prabhupada says about hope, transformed from material to spiritual. He says, We are not ashamed to admit that this fact was experienced in our practical life. Were we not favored by His divine grace, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, by our first meeting for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Without seeing Him at that opportune moment, we could have become a great business magnate, but never would we have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the factual service of the Lord under the instructions of His divine grace. In the Guru Vandana that we sing regularly, you'll notice the word asha, or hope, is there. For instance, Guru Mukhapadma Bhakya Chitete Koriya Aikya Arana Kariho Mani Ash. Shri Guru Charana Rate E She Utamagati Je Prashari Pure Sarva Ash Asha. So my only hope is to have my consciousness purified by the words emanating from His lotus mouth. Attachment to His lotus feet is the perfection that fulfills all my hopes for spiritual progress. And Prabhupada commented on that verse, if you want to make real progress, then you must be firmly faithful to the lotus feet of Guru. This is the instruction in the whole Vaishnava philosophy. So, remembering this, noticing it in ourselves, what we're hoping for, and learning through our association with devotees and our spiritual practice to transfer that hope fully to the process of devotional service in the words of Krishna for going back to Godhead, for attaining the perfection of devotional service, is one of the elements listed by Rupa Goswami in this, out of the 64 in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu for advancement in spiritual life. Ashabanda. Any last comment? Yes.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.
Yes, who is that? It's Malini, go ahead.
Please accept the humble obeisances to Prabhuji. This is Malini Devadasi.
Jai Malini.
Prabhuji, one thing I really liked from the class today was when I was just thinking about this question, I was in a dilemma and I was chanting this morning that should I pray for love for Krishna or should I pray for service? So you answered that question very nicely that if you just chant Hare Krishna, avoid offenses and pray for service, then Krishna will give you the pure love. So that was very encouraging and hopeful, Prabhuji. And another point I was thinking, and then depending completely on Krishna, I was just listening to that, and Geeta Priya had a cough, so I had to give her some medicine. So I gave her the medicine, and after a few minutes, I said, because you had the medicine, now your cough is gone. And then she turns to me and she tells me, no, I touched Krishna, so that's why my cough is gone. So I was thinking, you know, we should depend like that on Krishna.
Nice points, Malini. Thank you very much. And thank you, Geeta Priya. Okay.
It's Shyamroop Das from Sacramento again. He's saying the point of transformation of hope was very inspirational. Thank you.
Oh, good, good.
Yes, Prabhu, like hope, and when you have spiritual hope or material hope, and you try for it, and it doesn't work out, and or Krishna, you are not getting Krishna's mercy. In the same time, we read in Bhagavad Gita, like recently I reading this, you know, chapter 3rd, Chad, and like there Krishna clearly mentioned, like everyone is like forced to act helplessly through the, you know, three modes of material. So if, you know, sometimes we hope for Krishna and we are not getting Krishna's mercy, is that because we are bound to the three modes of material world and material natures?
It's generally because we're not realizing that we are getting Krishna's mercy. Okay. We're not aware of it. But we will become aware of it later. So we should go on with our practice of devotional service. And oftentimes what looks like a time when we weren't getting Krishna's mercy, we'll realize that actually that was real mercy. And the other thing was that I expected was not the real thing. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivrinda ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanande Haribo. Hare Krishna. What a pleasure to be with all of you here on a Wednesday night. It seems like, Hare Krishna, nice to see you, Manju. It seems like the most, the least likely day of the week to hold a spiritual program. Mostly around the world, people are on Sundays and so forth. So those who come on Wednesday get a special impetus going into the rest of the weekend. It's something to look forward to. And keeping the vibration going in one's life is a sure bet for making advancement in spiritual life, whether one wants to or not. If you just keep towards the light, then the darkness dissipates. And the light comes from the vibration itself. It's from the spiritual world. And someone may not have complete faith in that, but faith grows as one has experience for oneself, particularly in the improvement of one's consciousness, meaning that the harassment of material desires subsides, and one also gets knowledge, uncommon knowledge, and it's hard to justify, except one can see that the more one engages in hearing and chanting and devotional service, that these two naturally come, detachment from worldly things and an increase in spiritual knowledge. And therefore, the Shastra says, Sudha Goswami says, Tachtradhana munayo jnana vairagya muktaya pashyantyatmanichatmanam bhaktya shuta grihitaya, that we become fortified by these two elements, the detachment from the world and knowledge about spiritual life. And he says that a thoughtful person, one must be thoughtful to enter into spiritual life and be steady, can take advantage of these two things and then move ahead steadily in spiritual life. So coming to a program on Wednesday night is a very good idea, as I see all of you have discovered over the years and have participated in. And it feels like things are moving ahead effortlessly just by taking part in this hearing and chanting, doesn't it? That, I mean, there is some effort that takes place, but it seems as if most tasks are undoable. And there's a wonder about how we'll actually get so many things done in life, how we overcome certain obstacles. But by the power of spiritual strength, going on hearing and chanting and working towards improving our devotional service, Krishna makes arrangements. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ananyaschintayantamam ye jana pariupasate tesham nityabhyuktanam yoga kshemam bahamyaham, that if you just devote your consciousness to me, that I will carry what you lack and preserve what you have. And I was thinking the other day, I can't carry what I lack and preserve what I have anyway, so why not surrender to Krishna and simply absorb myself in Krishna consciousness? There's no better occupation anywhere. Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, hey, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman, Nacharyar Marman.